Hello and welcome to this week's Arab Digest podcast. I'm William Law, editor of The Digest. Arab Digest is something of a rarity in Middle East analysis. Our daily newsletter has no sponsors, and we carry our podcasts without any advertising. It is our readers who support Arab Digest, and we intend to keep it that way. To find out how you can support a truly independent voice in the Middle East and North Africa, head to arabdigest.org. When you go to the website, check out how you can receive our reader-supported daily newsletter for 2 months for free. You heard that right, 2 months for free. In this world of information overload in which we all find ourselves, Arab Digest keeps it simple. With one article a day and the weekly podcast, we provide unique coverage of the Middle East and North Africa, featuring the very best experts, analysts, writers, and commentators. Essential reading, essential listening, and no overload. My guest today is Arij Al-Sarhan. Her brother, Abdulrahman Al-Sarhan, is serving a 20-year prison sentence in Saudi Arabia for tweets he wrote anonymously that were critical of the Saudi government. Arij, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell our listeners about your brother, Abdulrahman? It's now, what, a little more than 6 years since he was seized at his place of work, the Red Crescent headquarters in Riyadh, and forcibly disappeared. What does it say about the state of Saudi Arabia today?
Yeah, so as you said, it's been over 6 years now of enforced disappearance, and since my brother was kidnapped from his place of work at the Red Crescent in Saudi Arabia. It was during a mass crackdown on peaceful activists and online commentators. So he was held without any charge for an entire 3 years, during which he was brutally tortured. He was held in solitary confinement. He was denied from any legal access or access to lawyers, and without also denied completely from any communication with family. No phone calls, no visits. And during those 3 years, after 2 years of disappearance and after international increased pressure, he was allowed one minute phone call with a family member in Riyadh. And then he went into another disappearance for another year.
Can I just stop you there, Arij? You said a 1 minute phone call.
After 2 years, he had the first phone call, which was only 1 minute. During which we found out that he was held in Al-Hayr prison, a political prison well known in Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
I wanted to pause that for that to sink in for people and how terrible that must have been for you, yeah. For your family, the cruelty of that in itself. And as you say, held and all that time. And as you understand and believe, he was tortured.
Yeah, it was beyond imagination, like the amount of torture. We've been going through, also thinking about my brother every day, what he is going through. And of course, what my brother have endured is just, you know, it's heartbreaking and beyond. I can't even imagine the level. I mean, it's just really distressing and really painful to think about what he's been going through. And you asked me about the state of Saudi Arabia today. That just sheds the light of how Saudi Arabia is actually, you know, with all the PR campaigns about reform and so forth, in reality, there is this increased repression. And as you can see, my brother's case, among many other cases, my brother's case is not the only one, but this is becoming a practice in Saudi Arabia, a common practice, enforced disappearance, people being silenced for tweets or for, you know, posting their opinions on social media, asking about any sort of like citizens' rights, for example, talking about unemployment or poverty or women's rights. People get detained and imprisoned, tortured, disappeared for years. There's a lot of cases now are being forcibly disappeared. So the state of Saudi Arabia today, there's lack of rule of law, and there's no respect for international human rights laws that actually Saudi Arabia have signed on years ago. One example I can share with you, for example, in 2022, the United Nations have issued an opinion declaring that my brother's detention is arbitrary and calling out the different human rights abuses committed against him and called for his immediate and unconditional release, yet the Saudi government doesn't respect the international human rights law and doesn't act on the recommendations of the United Nations, or, you know, even respect their agreements that Saudi Arabia have agreed on. Added to that, not even the Saudi laws themselves are being respected. In the past, of course, it was more respect to at least the Saudi laws, even though there was no real, like, there's still repression and not much human rights. But today is a lot more worse than any time before. And there's no legal procedures, for example, and there's no institutions to complain to. So in the past, at least there was some doors people can seek help, can try to reach out to the Saudi officials. Today, all doors are closed. There is no way to complain to anyone. There is no institutions to follow up on human rights abuses and try to push for laws to improve human rights situation. And it's just basically becoming a completely police state.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that all the doors are closed now, because I can recall when I was still able to get into Saudi Arabia interviewing a university professor who had been convicted and was sentenced to, initially, I believe it was 100 lashes. When he challenged the judge, it was increased to 1,000 lashes. He appealed to the then Crown Prince Abdullah, who interceded, and the charges were dropped, and he didn't suffer any of those horrific consequences. But you make a very important point that today all roads run through Mohammed bin Salman, and he really controls the judiciary in quite an extraordinary way. And there is really no way for families of the people who are detained and forcibly disappeared to protest. And in fact, protesting could put them in great danger themselves. He was convicted, wasn't he, and sentenced to what, 20 years, as well as 20 years of being unable to leave the country after he'd served his sentence?
Yeah, so after 3 years of being held without any charge and completely disappeared, he was brought to a secret sham trial. And within 1 month, he got sentenced to 20 years imprisonment, followed by 20 years travel ban for tweeting. And although he appealed the sentencing a few months later, still they upheld the sentence. And that was like just another secret sham trials, really fast, you know, and without having any access to legal counsel or access to his lawyer, they upheld the sentence. And since then, he is forcibly disappeared. We were denied completely any communication, any phone calls or any visits. As of today, he is still forcibly disappeared. We don't know if he's still in a higher prison, if he is still in solitary confinement, if he is still okay, you know, physically and health-wise. Is he still being tortured? All of these questions, you know, we have all these questions every day. And unfortunately, we still cannot communicate or check on his well-being.
No answers. And what was he convicted of? He was, as you said, he was tweeting, and I believe it was satirical tweets. But what was the crime for which he was sentenced to these 20 years in jail?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it's all based on tweets, and specifically satirical tweets, not even serious tweets, critical of the situation in Saudi Arabia, especially the economical situation, the rise of taxes without having the right to vote for the people, calling for democracy and human rights, defending other prisoners of conscience. So they charged, like as many of other cases, they charged him of offending state institution and Saudi officials, for example, using the internet to disturb the public order and religious values, and all bases on peaceful satirical tweets.
The tweets, I mean, he tweeted anonymously. So how did the authorities find out? Remind me how they found out about him.
Yeah, so when Abdurrahman was detained in 2018, that was during a mass crackdown on online commentators, like people who tweet, who express opinions on Twitter, or known human rights activists. So later on, we found out, and this is based on documented reports and FBI investigations, that Abdurrahman's, the anonymous Twitter account that he used was leaked among around 6,000 other accounts, by Saudi spies that were implanted in Twitter. So these ex-Twitter employees have leaked private information of more than around 6,000, as per the reports. And among them was my brother's account. And that's using spying, that's how they were going after a lot of the activists or the online commentators. So we believe that's how they tracked my brother, and that's how they, you know, found him, because he was also detained from his place of work. There was no warrant of arrest or anything. They just took him out from the from his office, and that they're going to ask him a few questions, and he will be back. And he never got back.
As I recall, there were these three individuals who were working at Twitter. Two of them got out of the country, but one of them was arrested, I believe, and convicted. Have I got that right?
Yes, you got that right. So, yeah, one of them was tried and convicted here in the U.S., and the two others actually escaped, left the country, and it was, like, within very short time, like, a couple of days, they managed to leave the country with the help, as per the reports, they were able to leave the country with the help of the Saudi consulate, the Saudi embassy here in America.
You're listening to the Arab Digest podcast with me, William Law, and the Saudi human rights activist, Arij Al-Sadhan. Arab Digest is a truly independent voice on the Middle East and North Africa. No advertising and no sponsors. In the information overload world in which we all find ourselves, Arab Digest keeps it simple. One article a day and the weekly podcast from top experts, analysts, writers, and commentators. Check us out on arabdigest.org. When you go to the website, be sure and look out for the offer of a free 2-month trial to our reader-supported daily newsletter. Yeah, so the Saudi government's fingerprints are all over this case, aren't they? And I'm wondering, you're an American citizen. Mm-hmm. How supportive has the U.S. government been during these past 6 years of such anguish and pain for you, for your family, and of course for us?
Yeah, so at the beginning, it was very difficult, honestly, to get support, since at that time we were trying to, like, just to try to solve things quietly. But unfortunately, because all doors were closed, I had to go public and start speaking out. And since I started speaking out publicly, speaking out to the media, that's when I started to get attention from the U.S. government. And I'm grateful, actually, there I got a lot of support, especially from the Congress. Especially Speaker Pelosi have been very supportive of our case over the past few years. She'd been following closely our case and Abdurrahman's case and overall the human rights situation. And besides, also other senators like Senator Garden have been very supportive of Abdurrahman's case. However, in the past, I would say year or just like the past couple of years, support for human rights in general have been a lot less and like almost forgotten. And mainly after President Biden visited Saudi Arabia and fist bumped with MBS, it seems human rights from that moment kind of forgotten and started to take a back seat in terms of the U.S. government's priorities. So right now it's like, you know, as if we're going to point zero, it's a lot more. I mean, we still get the attention, of course, but it's not as before. And there's a lot more can be done. We know, for example, when President Biden first became president of the United States, few women activists, for example, were released, even though they're still under travel ban. But at least we saw some change. And because at that time, there was a lot more focus on human rights. The State Department were very more active on, following up on human rights situation, including my brother's case. But then it got, you know, forgotten after that. In the past couple of years, it seems human rights is not the center of the attention in terms of foreign policy anymore, and it's almost forgotten.
Yeah, we're seeing that, aren't we, with the Gaza war and the situation there, with the rights of Palestinian women, children, civilians, tens of thousands killed, and our Western governments basically backing and supporting the Israelis. And I think he too, Biden, because didn't he during his election campaign against Trump say that he would turn Saudi Arabia into a pariah state?
Yeah, exactly. So during his campaign, he called out the Saudi crown prince for his human rights abuses, especially for the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, and that he's going to hold him accountable and that he's going to make human rights the center of his foreign policy, which was great promises. It gave us and many other people hope that we're going to see some improvement in human rights. At least, you know, we're going to see, you know, some hope in our cases. However, as you mentioned, now in the past couple of years, and especially in this last year, it's completely the opposite. It seems like human rights completely forgotten and no longer count. And it's quite frightening because you don't know who to believe anymore. Now we're waiting for another upcoming election. And me as an American citizen, I don't know who to believe anymore. Like, you know, it's kind of like makes us question the democratic values that we have here in the West and the human rights values that we have in here in the West. It seems that doesn't have influence like before. Not only that, it seems it's completely forgotten. Like you mentioned, the war in Gaza is very heartbreaking. Children are being murdered day to day, you know, a genocide right in front of our eyes. And there is hardly any actions taken by democratic leaders to bring peace and to stop this genocide. So yeah, unfortunately, it seems like human rights and democratic values in the past, especially in the past couple of years, it seems, you know, forgotten and not the center of attention anymore, and not having that influence that, you know, we usually look up to democratic countries to have influence on other countries to push for democratic values and human rights, but we don't see that anymore.
And it's interesting too, isn't it, Arij, because the basis of democracy is freedom of speech, is an independent judiciary, is fair and open trials, is being able to speak your mind without being wound up in jail and beaten up and then sent to a court and sentenced to a huge number of years simply for mild criticism. These are the essences of our Western democracy, and yet we seem to be walking away from them. Mohammed bin Salman, you know, he's been rehabilitated. The Western governments now entertain him. They look to Saudi Arabia and see big investment opportunities. There's weapons sales. There's Vision 2030. There's music and theaters. And he's a reformer. And all of these wonderful statements about Mohammed bin Salman changing Saudi Arabia. And yet, there is Abdulrahman, there are thousands of people in jails, disappeared. And as you say, we in the West have simply walked away from that. We've said, you know, that doesn't matter somehow. Our values are, what, transactional, and we can put them aside when we choose to.
Exactly, exactly. And yeah, unfortunately, as of today, we have the best democracy that money can buy. And you're right, Western democracies right now have been backsliding. And obviously, there's a lot more weaker support for democratic values overall. And as you mentioned, this is emboldening, making dictators more emboldened, like we've seen with MBS. He's committing more human rights abuses than any time before. Like I mentioned earlier, the practice of enforced disappearance was never a thing like right now. Now it's more common than any time before. A lot more cases are forcibly disappeared, some for years, like my brother. Families are living in constant fear. Like even families who try to ask about their loved ones, they get detained too and forcibly disappeared. One example is Salman al-Dawish. I don't know if you've seen his case, but he was also forcibly disappeared since, I believe, since 2017. And his sons have tried to reach out to the Saudi officials. And right now, I think three of them are detained because they tried to ask about their father. They never got any phone calls. There was, you know, leaked rumors that he'd been tortured, brutally tortured by MBS himself. There's a lot of other cases. Salma Shiha, for example, got sentenced to what was it, 37 years, if I'm not mistaken, and then it got reduced later, but it 27 years. Still lengthy sentences. So Abdurrahman, for example, he was probably the first to receive a lengthy sentence as a sort of like the Saudi response, because they are feeling emboldened that they can get away with human rights abuses. And from that moment, we've started to see more more cases where people are being given lengthy sentences, crazy amount of years of lengthy sentences. You know, there's cases, there's one case I think received like 50 years. So for example, my brother's case, Salma Shihab, Noura Ghahtani, there's also a couple other cases, I forgot their names, but they, the practice of lengthy sentences and enforced disappearance is now more common than any time before. And it's all because dictators like MBS is feeling emboldened and there is no, he's not being held accountable, or these abusers are not being questioned by the democratic countries like it used to be, you know. So that brings not only risk to the people, to the Saudi citizens who are, or the human rights activists in countries like Saudi Arabia, but also it increases international repression. And this is one of the things we've witnessed in the past few years. Me, myself, and many other families of victims and human rights activists who are living abroad, they are being targeted. They're being harassed.
Have you been targeted and harassed yourself?
Yes, I've been threatened continuously on social media in the past few years since I became vocal, especially in the first few years. I was really threatened with murder and that they're going to kidnap me and I'll be thrown in the sewers next to my brother and tortured and all that stuff. And physically as well, I've been tracked at least a couple of times, one time in Oslo and another time was in Washington, D.C. as I was visiting to attend a human rights event.
Were you accosted by people or you followed or what happened?
Yeah, I was followed. For example, in Oslo, I was followed. I was heading to the airport in the early morning around 5 a.m. and the streets were empty and there was this, you know, individual who was completely out of place, you know, and was monitoring me, was walking the same base as I was walking and keeping an eye on me and was talking on a speaker, like had like headphones and was talking to someone. And it just didn't feel right. I could feel that there is something wrong. So I decided to change my direction and just to head to the first building I could see with security inside. And the moment I changed my direction, that person have called me saying, "Hey, where are you going?" So when I ignored and I just continued walking, you know, heading to that building, he shouted again in Arabic Saudi accent. So I knew right away that he is someone who belongs to or being sent by the Saudi government or like the Saudi embassy over there. That was the first incident that was very terrifying. And it just made me aware that, you know, they are serious with their threats and I have to be careful anywhere I go that, you know, they are willing to kidnap people. Like, for example, what happened to Lujain in Emirates, she got kidnapped.
Lujain Al-Athlouli, women's rights activist who, as you say, was kidnapped in the United Arab Emirates, flown back to Riyadh, given a lengthy sentence, received terrible treatment in jail, was tortured, has been released, but is banned from leaving the kingdom. As you say, the word is terrifying, and it must be, I mean, so difficult.
Yeah.
How do you keep going forward? And how do you keep hope going?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not easy to actually navigate this. And I'm sure there's a lot of families who are going through what we're, of course, going through, and they handle things differently. But honestly, we keep hope because all the support we get from people from around the world, from human rights organizations, keeping my brother's case out there, continuously speaking about my brother's case, making sure that he's not forgotten. I think the worst thing that any detainee would suffer or like have to deal with is that they would be forgotten. And, you know, keeping the case out there gives us, as the family members, hope that that one day we're going to be able, hopefully, to get over these human rights abuses, get to see my brother again, overall see improvement in human rights all over, you know, like in the Saudi Arabia, and to see a lot of other detainees hopefully to be freed. So yeah, every voice count. It doesn't matter like small or large, every voice count. A simple tweet, hashtag free Sadhan, can help, can bring attention and, you know, just show that these cases are not forgotten and it may save someone's life. Yeah.
Repeat that again, then the tag for the tweet.
Hashtag free Sadhan. And also for additional support, we have a website, freesathand.org. There's several ways to support. Either there's tweets that are already prepared, or people can maybe readjust them however they like. But even just tweeting freesathand can bring a lot of attention, can help. Also, another thing I wanted to bring attention to, currently there's a campaign by Amnesty International highlighting 5 cases. Abdurrahman is one of them. They've also issued a report, very good report, on the Saudi laws currently being updated or changed in a way that is actually allowing for more abuses to happen. So I would definitely, for anyone who wants to learn more, to check that report and also to check the campaign. And I would always appreciate any support for the campaign, and also whenever there is anything mentioned about Saudi Arabia. I know there's a lot of PR campaigns happening out there, but one way to use these campaigns to help human rights and human rights activists is to always ask about these activists. Ask by name, or in general, ask about the deteriorating human rights situation in Saudi Arabia.
Mm. Okay, well, Arish, I know you're a terrific fighter on behalf of the Abdurrahman, but also on behalf of all prisoners of conscience. People who simply have made mild criticisms and have found themselves in these appalling situations, and their families are paying a terrific price. So mention again your website.
Yeah, my website is freesathand.org. And it's also, I think it's listed on my Twitter account, X account.
Yeah, and as you said before, every voice counts, and it is so important to know there are voices out there who are speaking out.
Yeah, there are a lot of voices out there. And honestly, there's also more and more activists, human rights activists, and people who've never been human rights activists in the past, but they are just not feeling safe, not feeling good about the abuses that are happening in the country, and they decide to flee the country and start to speak out, which is really, I think it's good, because the more voices we have, the more attention we can bring this to the situation of human rights in Saudi Arabia. There are many amazing voices out there, for example, like Lina Al-Hadloul, Abdullah Al-Oda, many others. I can't name everyone, but there's many amazing people out there who are very vocal about the situation in Saudi Arabia. And I would highly recommend to check their tweets out, check their interviews, or a lot of them actually are also working in human rights organizations such as Al-Qasd for Human Rights. Al-Qasd is very focused and have been following on Saudi human rights for a long time. So they are very knowledgeable on the cases, and they will be the first usually to report on cases they find out internally from what's going on in Saudi Arabia as the families try to somehow get their stories out. So I highly recommend to check them out as well. But yeah, you know, every voice counts. So, you know, keep calling for human rights, you know, improvement, and calling out the abuses whenever you see anything about Saudi Arabia. Call for individual cases, free Sadhan, ask about Abdurrahman, why is he still forcibly disappeared? Call for his release. And of course, you know, still we are waiting on any response from the Saudis in response to the UN opinion, which clearly states that Abdurrahman is arbitrarily detained and should be immediately and unconditionally released.
Arish, I wish you the very best, and I salute your courage and your determination. And I thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
My guest today on the Arab Digest podcast was the Saudi human rights activist, Arish Al-Sarhan. To find out more about her campaign on behalf of her brother, Abdurrahman, and other prisoners of conscience held in Saudi jails, go to the freesathan.org website. That's free, F-R-E-E, Sadhan, S-A-D-H-A-N, freesathan.org website. The amnesty report that Arish spoke about is titled Manifesto for Repression, and you can find it on amnesty.org. It was released on the 19th of March this year. Al-Qasd is a London-based human rights organization. That's A-L-Q-S-T, Al-Qasd.org. You'll have noticed that we bring you the podcast with no advertising and no sponsors. We are a truly independent source for analysis and commentary on the Middle East and North Africa. If you'd like to support our independent voice, head to our website at arabdigest.org. We can find out about our reader-supported daily newsletter and how to get a free two-month trial. The newsletter features the very best of Middle East and North Africa analysts, commentators, and writers, contributors like Arij. Check us out on arabdigest.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and search our library of over 200 podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, SoundCloud, or Amazon. Our podcast guests provide unique insights, insights you simply will not find anywhere else. Thanks for listening. I'm William Law, editor of the Arab Digest, essential reading, essential listening from independent sources.